This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Imperial Death Squads and the Shredding of Iraqi National Life. Ahmed Hamad al-Tamimi used to live in the village of Kuba before Iraq descended into sectarian war, writes Peter Beaumont in Baghdad, Sunday, March 4, 2007, in The Observer in London. Kuba used to be home to around 700 families. The vast majority was Sunnis. Tamimi, spiritual head of Diyala province's Shias and a follower of Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistemi, was the imam of the local mosque. He farmed groves of date palms and oranges close to the Diyala River. That was then, writes Beaumont. He has not seen his house, his farm, or old mosque for close to 2 years. The Shias have left Kuba, writes Beaumont, pushed out of their homes over 2 years of gradual, deadly ethnic cleansing that is now almost complete. Both communities have retrenched in areas where they are safe, which they can defend, sometimes with barricades and armed men. Yesterday, at Yusufiya, 12 miles south of the capital, Baghdad, six Sunni men who had received death threats for mixing with local Shias were killed in execution-style slayings. On Friday, writes Beaumont, at least 14 members of the Shia-led security forces were abducted and killed. While more than 1 million Iraqis have left Iraq, 3 million have been internally displaced. The displacement has been conducted with ruthless efficiency, writes Beaumont. A mosque will be attacked, a grenade thrown at a house, men kidnapped and killed, a few houses burnt, delivering the message to get out. Many Shias displaced from villages near Kuba have been relocated to Shab in northern Baghdad, arriving in the middle of a tit-for-tat expulsion. Iraq's Migration and Displacement Ministry notes that nearly 100,000 Iraqi families, about 500,000 individuals, have been displaced since February 2006, a little more than 1 year ago. In Anbar, there's been counterinsurgency led by Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, and it is challenging the power of the sheikhs and has begun a retaliatory war in the Sunni community, according to Beaumont. Are these really sectarian battles? Are these death squads of Sunni and Shia? In fact, as we will discuss on Taking Aim today, this is the work of imperial death squads with the clear intent of shredding Iraqi national life. Ralph.
Yes, Maya, the evidence is overwhelming, and even in the article by Peter Beaumont, which is a conventional article, it becomes clear, because the young men who are being described here state categorically that the American forces are the reason for their plight, and they expand upon that because they state that the weapons are supplied by the American forces, and that the forces who are masked and who are doing the killing invariably come armed with U.S. weapons. The weapons that are being confiscated wind up in the hands of the death squads. They are confiscated from the people who are targeted. And that's what the surge is about. After these people have been deprived of any means of self-defense in the name of eliminating an insurgency, these people then become the targets of the death squads ad seriatim, whether Sunni or Shia, it's the same pattern. In fact, Peter Beaumont unwittingly calls it a metaphor. It is a metaphor for the entire struggle, he says. The U.S. artillery, the sound of the artillery shelling the palm groves to Baghdad's west, the dull thuds as meaningless and regular as a headache. For the Mahdi army blamed for the worst of the death squad violence since the bombing of the Golden Dome at Samarra, the security plan operation is actually aimed at them. What does it mean? Once again, they had to be deprived of any means of self-defense and then targeted in their turn. And indeed, the Peter Beaumont article makes clear what the cycle is. And 40% of those operating in the name of the Jaish al-Mahdi, nominally the Shia militia, 40% of them are in fact masked gangsters working with the security forces and pretending or claiming to be in fact part of the Jaish al-Mahdi. These are rogue leaders, it states. Each unit of the Mahdi army has an intelligence officer who answers directly to Muqtada al-Sadr. And these are people who are not known to anybody. They are blacklisted when they are known, and the name is sent to the chairman of the office so that the militia can remove these people, these fake militia, who are in fact death squad operatives carrying out these terrible atrocities against the population at large.
And what he doesn't note, Ralph, is that Anbar province, which has been a stronghold of the revolt, the rebellion against the U.S. occupation, that Anbar province, which extends from outside Baghdad to the Syrian border, is mainly populated by the Sunni members of the Dulaim tribe, and that these people were the main force within the Republican Guard.
Of Saddam Hussein,
in fact. This was the stronghold. So what we have here in Anbar province, in my opinion, is the Republican Guard, the people who were part of the army creating an organized resistance to the U.S. occupation. And what he calls tribal counterinsurgency, in fact, was the a bulwark of the military force of Iraq.
Nothing tribal about it. The Republican Guard, which did embrace this particular tribe indeed, but was a national force and saw itself as a national force. Now, Patrick Coburn in The Independent on February 23rd, 2006, that's a year ago, describes the destruction of the holiest Shia shrine, which he states in his headline, brings Iraq to the brink of civil war. Iraq, he writes, took a lethal step closer towards disintegration and total civil war yesterday. After a devastating attack on the country's holiest site, the destruction of the golden-domed Shia shrine in Samarra sparked a round of bloody retaliation in which up to 60 Sunni mosques were attacked, scores of people killed and injured.
This was an attack on February 22, 2006, and the Golden Mosque in Samarra, north of Baghdad, was attacked at 6:55 a.m. when men dressed in police uniform tied up the guards and planted explosives. What's interesting is that in the Wisdom Fund on the Internet, they include the Patrick Coburn article, and then they follow it with some very interesting information.
It's the devastating documentation that refutes the bourgeois column of Mr. Coburn.
That's right. Enver Masoud, Basra, were the British undercover agents carrying explosives? Why? And then there's this piece, and it's by Muhammad al-Samarai, and he writes to the Wisdom Fund, I own an internet cafe near the mosque. I sleep in my shop because I worry about my computers being taken by thieves. At 8:30 in the evening, there were joint forces of Iraqi ING, that's the National Guard, and Americans, and they asked me to stay in the shop and not to leave the area. 9 o'clock in the evening, now he's recounting the events of the night before the attack on the Golden Dome. At 9 in the evening, they left the area. At 11 in the evening, they came back and started to patrol the area until the morning. 6 in the morning the next day, remember the attack was at 6:55. The ING leave the area. And at 6:30, Americans leave the area. And at 6:40 was the first explosion. And at 6:41, the second explosion.
So consider what he's saying here, in which we will amplify. The U.S. troops and the special forces, their security forces, are there in full force. And then they vacate and occupy and disappear and leave the area. Now the bombs go off.
In addition to his report, the Baghdad dweller on February 23rd had two other eyewitness reports. And they all confirmed what the owner of this internet cafe near the mosque, Mohammed al-Samari, had said. There had been a curfew from 8 p.m. in the evening the day before until 6 in the morning, and that the Iraqi security services and the Americans had surrounded and patrolled the city all the time.
Well, Maya, there are some other aspects of this which have now emerged. The men who tied up the guards and planted the explosives were in police uniform. And moreover, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei immediately called upon all Shia not to seek revenge against Sunni Muslims, stating that this was a plot. This is a plot to force the Shia to attack Sunni mosques and other properties respected by the Sunni. Any measure to contribute to that direction is in fact an aid to the enemies, the people who have carried out this crime, the enemies of Islam. It is forbidden by Sharia, by religious law, he told the Shia populace, to in any way strike at Sunni mosques or at Sunni population, because this is not a crime of the Sunni. The Ayatollah was absolutely explicit, and the leader of Iran, the religious leader of Iran, immediately declared, "The intelligence services of the United States and Israel have carried out the bombing of the Golden Shrine in Samarra. Everybody is forbidden to engage in any reprisals against the Sunni, who are innocent people and not involved in this atrocity." Explicit, immediate, overwhelming, and clear. And it is amplified by some fundamental things. The irony is that the shrine at Samarra was actually controlled by Sunnis and was claimed by Sunnis. That means the Sunnis administered the Shia's most holy shrine in Samarra. They were a totally integrated population. The people who ran the shrine are Sunnis. Samarra is a specific case where the Sunnis are claiming to be grandsons of the Prophet Muhammad. They call themselves Sayyid, the identical word that the Shia use for themselves. The shrine was never threatened by Sunnis at all. Like all of the Sunnis, whether Sayyid or not, they were respecting it because this was the place of their grandsons, the grandsons of the Prophet. It was a shared religious shrine, understood and experienced as such by Sunni and Shia alike. There was no incentive and no motive for Sunni to attack the Golden Shrine of Samarra.
And the reason we discuss this is because the attack on the Golden Shrine of Samarra is considered the starting point, the key point of a sectarian battle within Iraq. Very important article appeared on February 24th of 2006 and in The Guardian and by Sami Ramadi. And I say it's a very important article. It is quoted extensively throughout other internet sources. The popular response to Iraq's latest atrocities has been to blame the occupation, not rival sects, writes Ramadi. This is not civil war, he states emphatically. It's America fostering sectarian division. As the live coverage of Wednesday's demonstrations on Iraqi and Arab satellite TV stations clearly shows, Ramadi writes, the popular mood has been anti-occupation rather than sectarian. Iraq is awash with rumors about the collusion of the occupation forces and their Iraqi clients with sectarian attacks and death squads. The U.S. is widely seen as fostering sectarian division to prevent the emergence of a united national resistance.
Maya, here's an irony. The imam of the holy shrine, the golden shrine, Imam al-Askari, who died as a result of his injuries from the bombing, stated before he died My tomb, or my shrine in Samarra, is a refuge for both Shia and Sunnis now and in the future. Baghdad must respect this, and the horrific attack which destroyed much of the Golden Mosque and generated sectarian outrages, supposedly, attacks on over 50 Sunni mosques. What was the response of the Sunni to the attacks on the 50 mosques? As quickly as these horrible events began, they all, the leaders of Sunni and Shia, called for an end and replaced by act, and it was replaced by, as I'm quoting, acts of solidarity between Sunni and Shia across Iraq. The Sunnis were the first to go to mass demonstrations of solidarity with the Shia in Samarra, as well as to condemn the mosque bombings. Demonstrations of solidarity between Sunni and Shia took place all over Iraq, in Basra, in Dwaraniya, in Nasiriya, in Kut, in Salah ad-Din. Tens of thousands of Shia marched shouting anti-American slogans throughout Sadr City, the huge Shia slum area of Baghdad, which is home to nearly half the population of the capital city. And in the primary Shia city of Kut, south of Baghdad, tens of thousands marched shouting slogans against America and Israel and burning U.S. and Israeli flags. This is a report of Dar Jamail, Eyewitness, Iraq Dispatches, February 24, 2006.
And Ralph Sami Ramadi, in his Guardian article, quotes the slogan, "No to America, no to terrorism." And he states that the prime leaders of the Shia, Mukhtar al-Sadr, Nasrallah, the leader of the Hezbollah in Lebanon, Ayatollah Khalisi, leader of the Iraqi National Foundation Congress, and Grand Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran's spiritual leader, along with the Grand Ayatollah Sistani in Iraq, declared it would be a grave sin to attack Sunnis, as did all the Sunni clerics about attacks on Shias. In other words, after the attack on the Golden Shrine, the dome, both leaders of the Shias and the Sunni, these clerics all came forward to say, this is not our work, let's not have division. And clearly, the word on the street was no to America, no to terrorism. This was the case of the spontaneous protest marches, of the large march in Kut that was led by the Mahdi army, and in Baghdad, Sadr City, the anti-occupation march there, so that all the consequent attacks on the Sunni mosques were not the result of the Shia resistance, not the response of the Shias, but obviously the result of the imperial forces.
In the report of Dar Jamil, as in the subsequent report of Robert Fisk, hundreds if not thousands of Iraqis are tortured to death and summarily executed every month in Baghdad alone by death squads working out of the Ministry of Interior, controlled by the United States. The United Nations has documented this. Outgoing human rights chief in Iraq has confirmed it. Last July, the morgue alone received 1,100 bodies, 900 of which bore evidence of torture and summary execution. The pattern prevailed throughout the year until December. Ministry of Interior, masked death squads. This is not sectarian violence. This is the devastation, the destruction, the fragmenting, the tearing and rending of the nation of Iraq. Last July, the pattern was only the little beginning. Quote, and this is Patrick Coburn and Andrew Buncombe, the activities of the death squads operating out of the Ministry of Interior are pushing Iraq ever closer to sectarian civil war. Ray McGovern, the former counterintelligence functionary for the Central Intelligence Agency and for the United States. Ray McGovern states he does not rule out Western involvement in the destruction of the mosques, notably the Askariya Mosque bombing, in light of previous false flag operations that have advanced a hidden agenda of ruling circles in the United States. During the mid-1980s, McGovern himself was one of the senior figures preparing the briefs for precisely such operations, one-on-one with the Vice President, the Secretary of State and Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, and he states, Western intelligence is behind the mosque bombings. This is on February 20th, 2006. Note how the American framework of disaster is being portrayed as an Iraq versus Iraqi war, as if the huge occupation has nothing to do with the appalling violence in Iraq, states Robert Fisk in his seminal column on the subject. Iraq, he states, and he knows the country, is not a sectarian society. People are intermarried. Shiites and Sunnis marry each other routinely. Militias are not divided according to religion. And in fact, what we're dealing here with death squads determined to foment a civil war. There has never been a civil war in Iraq. The real question I ask myself is, who are these people trying to provoke this civil war, which has never occurred in the history of the country? Now the Americans will say it's Al-Qaeda, it's the Sunni insurgents, it's death squads. These death squads work for the Ministry of Interior. Who runs the Ministry of Interior in Baghdad? Who pays the Ministry of the Interior? Who pays the militia men who make up the death squads? Who are the occupation authorities, Robert Fisk is asking? Someone is trying to provoke a civil war in Iraq. This is quoted by ABC, Lateline Australia, on March 2nd, 2006. Somebody is pushing the country to, you know, to get the option of civil war. Why? Who is the beneficiary? This is now an Iraqi. I'm an Iraqi, and I am insisting I'm Iraqi. I don't want to use these new titles, Sunni and Shia. They have never entered our language before. We have never referred to ourselves as Sunni or Shia. We intermarry. We go to mosque together. We've never thought of ourselves in religious terms. We are Muslim, my dear. This is the identity of our nation. They are trying to divide us to go into a sub-identity, to make a cause of fighting, to provoke people against each other. We refuse it.
Ralph, this is amplified in reports from Al Jazeera and also in many of the testimonies that are given by people to human rights organizations throughout the world. Al Jazeera recently, March 2nd, 2007, death, forceful immigration threaten Iraqi scientists. Because part of this, you might say, Salvador option, in other words, death squads that are trained and organized by the United States, as in El Salvador, to break up the resistance and the rebellion, the striving for national identity and also national integrity, national sovereignty, that this is organized by, as we've saw in Nicaragua with the Contras and El Salvador with the death squads, the Dabusson death squads.
Dobison.
Right, that were organized and trained by the United States Special Forces along with the Mossad. We have that taking place in Iraq. And as Al Jazeera notes, that key targets are the Iraqi scientists and also the academics. And it's not what Al Jazeera is doing is reporting on the results of the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, that is UNESCO. And UNESCO has put out a call for countries to take united action to protect the Iraq's academics and scientists from what it called, euphemistically, a campaign of violence. What they mean is the death squad attacks that has emerged. 200 Iraqi scientists, engineers, and academics have been killed since March 20th, 2003. Now, this is a very low estimate, because there's been documentation of over 500 Iraqis.
900 in the month of July. We'll come on to that documentation about the death squad attacks, largely Mossad, which we'll document as well. The death squad attacks against scientists, against professors of teachers of literature, against doctors, the entire professional class. literally thousands of people have been murdered or disappeared as they walk into their university offices, as they emerge from their classrooms across Iraq.
That's right. Or what they are trying to do is force them to emigrate, them to leave. And they are
A million have left. And in the context of this, as the country is devastated, as its intellectual and professional classes are destroyed, as its working class populations are pitted against each other because their mosques are being blown up, here's a report in the Sunday Times. The Salvador option has been put into place in Iraq, a campaign of terror by death squads, by armed ready death squads trained by the United States, attacking Sunni and Shia alike. The goal is the incitement of a civil war and the breakup of Iraq, the original war aim of Bush's administration. The Ministry of the Interior in Baghdad, which is run by the Central Intelligence Agency, is directing the principal death squads. This is the Sunday Times. The Ministry of the has members that are not exclusively Shia, as the myth goes. The most brutal are special police commandos. And this unit was formed and trained by Central Intelligence Agency counterinsurgency experts, including veterans of the CIA's terror operations in Central America in the 1980s, notably El Salvador, unquote. And I want to, by the way, make a particular point about the Roberto d'Aubuisson, the far-right death squads that murdered the nuns, that murdered the archbishop, that murdered students and teachers and random assassinations and death squads. The lists, the names of the people to be targeted were provided by the ambassador of the United States in San Salvador to d'Aubuisson, Jimmy Carter's ambassador. Let it be known. Let it be stated. It's all wings of the ruling class, brothers. It is not just the Bushmen. This is imperialism. This is the modus operandi of a ruthless imperial hegemony that destroys countries, eliminates its populations to seize its resources, and to fragment it so there is no longer a national existence capable of asserting itself to defend its sovereignty, to defend its resources, to protect its population, and to resist a fascist-like imperial onslaught.
And, Ralph, it is not only the special units, the killer units, that are trained in Fort Bragg. It is also mercenaries, the private death squads that are paid for by secret State Department and Pentagon funds. The private mercenaries, they're ex-special forces, people who've retired and now find that they earn much more money in these privatized death squads, and they were used in Chile and Nicaragua and El Salvador and Guatemala, and they're recruited by private companies paid for by the United States under special funds. It doesn't come out in the specific war funding. It comes out in special funds that are paid through the State Department, and they now operate in Iraq. Referring again to the deaths of academics, Osama Abed al-Majid, the president of the Department for Research and Development at the Iraqi Ministry for Higher Education, pinpoints the Israeli Secret Service, the Mossad, in perpetrating violence against Iraqi scientists. And the Palestine Information Center published a report, June 2005, also targeting the Mossad in cooperation with U.S. military forces. And they documented the responsibility for the Mossad and the U.S. military forces in the assassination of 530 Iraqi scientists and professors in the 7 months prior to the report's publication in June 2005. Ralph.
Well, Maya, the devastating evidence is just it's total. However much the whoring media have attempted to impose upon the population of this country the idea that these are Iraqis who have only recently dropped from the trees, that they have a history of internecine bloodletting, as if there had never been a civil war in Ireland or Europe hadn't been rent by religious wars for 400 years. But in Iraq, there is no such history of religious violence. In Iraq, there is no such history of civil war. As the Boston Globe reported, the FBI's counterterrorism units have been involved with theft rings. Deadly car bombings in Iraq are using arms that are being supplied by the official authorities. According to government officials, this is in fact a U.S. operation, and we will deal with the fact that the counterterrorism components of the intelligence agencies were unleashed by Rumsfeld, unleashed by Bush, unleashed by Kofor Black on a scale in which they had never before been allowed to operate, even in Vietnam. According to Amnesty International, which investigated this, the U.S. government had arranged for the delivery of 200,000 Kalashnikov machine guns from Bosnia to Iraq from 2004 to 2005. And where do you think this weaponry was going? Into the hands of the death squads.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralf Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Imperial Death Squads and the Shredding of Iraqi National Life. Ralf?
Well, Maya, there's an important article by Seymour Hersh that was published in The New Yorker, and it's called The Redirection. And the article is a real revelation in many respects because it describes what it calls a strategic shift, in which suddenly we find, according to Seymour Hersh, that the demonizing of the Sunni al-Qaeda supposed terrorist resistance to the United States in Iraq is to be turned into an ally. The very forces that were once financed by the Central Intelligence Agency in Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden, Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, are now to be supported once again against the Shia in anticipation of the fragmentation of Iran. Having fragmented Iraq, they are now reversing field and they're going to make an alliance with the identical forces that they blame for 9/11, the forces they financed, the forces they ran as intelligence operatives are now in the redirection, the new allies of the Bushmen and of imperialism in Iraq.
This is the March 5th issue of The New Yorker, which appeared on the internet February 25th, The Redirection by Seymour Hersh. What Hersh writes, one contradictory aspect of the new strategy is that in Iraq, most of the insurgent violence directed at the American military has come from Sunni forces and not from Shiites. From the administration's perspective, the most profound and unintended strategic consequence of the Iraq war is the empowerment of Iran, as you were saying, Ralf. What he notes is that al-Qaeda is Sunni, and many of its operatives came from the extremist religious circles inside Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, which is becoming again the principal ally of the United States in this redirection. And Hersh writes that they ignored warnings from the intelligence community, referring to the administration, about the ties between Iraqi Shiite leaders and Iran, where some had lived in exile for years. And now, to the distress of the White House, Iran has forged a close relationship with the Shiite-dominated government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. So the new American policy and its broad outlines has been discussed publicly. In testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in January, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said that there is, quote, a new strategic alignment in the Middle East, end quote, separating, quote, reformers and extremists. By reformers, she means what she calls the Sunni states as centers of moderation. And the extremists, she means Iran, Syria, and Hezbollah, as she quotes, on the other side of the divide. Ralf.
Look, when they set their target on Iraq to fragment Iraq, and we will describe the longstanding plans for this, going back to the 1970s and the Oded Yinon plan, which we've written about in The Hidden History of Zionism, the fragmentation of each Middle Eastern country in its turn into its ethnic and religious components, the most important target of which was Iraq from their point of view. When they fragment and break up the country of Iraq, so goes Syria, so goes the Levant, so goes Lebanon, and it opens the way to targeting Iran. That has been their strategy now for almost 30 years. They have seen this as a design to destroy any national sovereign government, any national identity, any national fabric within the Arab Easts, so that the resources are at their disposal, the oil, the cheap labor. And indeed, the article here, the redirection, is explicit. The United States will now be bolstering Sunni extremist groups that espouse a militant vision of Islam, are hostile to America, and support al-Qaeda. You hear this? It's back to square one. The Sunni fundamentalists out of the Wahhabi of Saudi Arabia, who were deployed to destroy Afghanistan, who were deployed to destabilize the Soviet Union, who were deployed to carry out acts of terror against national and secular governments that were anti-imperialists or who had sought to nationalize their resources, these very instruments who were then in turn demonized for the 9/11 that was the work of the United States authorities themselves, and for whom the entire war on terror has been about targeting the al-Qaeda who hate us and who we will have to fight for the next 60 years. This indeed is now the new ally in the redirection. A contradictory aspect of the new strategy is that in Iraq, as you say, the insurgent violence has come from Sunni, not from the Shia, but now they are going to revert to square one. The redirection has not been public. The clandestine operations have been kept secret, leaving the execution of it and the funding to the Saudis, and finding other ways to work around congressional appropriations processes. State officials close to the administration ain't cutting in Congress on this particular operation for the moment. A senior member of the House Appropriations Committee told me he had heard about the new strategy, but we had not been briefed. We haven't got any of this. We asked for something and what's going on, and they say nothing. When we ask specific questions, they say, well, we'll get back to you. It's so frustrating. What are we describing here? What we've been stating for so long, brothers and sisters, the Congress, the electoral process, the formal democratic facade is form without content. The decisions are not made there. The decisions are not made in Congress or by Congress people. This is the charade. These are the public relations mouthpieces for policy decided in where? In the intelligence services, in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in the councils of the ruling class, the corporate and banking elite with their particular private institutions that control the state apparatus and fund it and then benefit from it. The key players behind the redirection, we are told, are Vice President Dick Cheney, the National Deputy Security Advisor Elliot Abrams, the departing ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, and Prince Bandar bin Sultan, the Saudi National Security Advisor. The policy shift has brought Saudi Arabia and Israel into a new strategic embrace. How's that for irony? The people who are being funded here, the redirection towards al-Qaeda, towards the Sunni fundamentalists, are in a warm embrace with the Israeli state. Why? Because they are instruments of imperial rule. Because it is an inside job, this entire terror apparatus of which they speak, that the real terrorists are in power in the United States, that imperialism and the imperial state is the author of 9/11, and is the author of the fragmentation design, and is the author of the attacks on peoples across any boundary to service only an abiding interest of profit and power and military control and preserving a capitalist system in terminal decay.
As Hirsch writes, in the 1980s and the early 90s, it was the Saudi government that subsidized the covert American CIA proxy war against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. Hundreds of young Saudis were sent into the border of Pakistan, where they set up religious schools, training bases, and recruiting facilities. Then, as now, many of the operatives were paid with Saudi money, and they were Salafis. Among them, of course, were Osama bin Laden and his associates, who founded al-Qaeda in 1988.
Look at this. Martin Indyk, senior State Department official in the Clinton administration and former ambassador to Israel, said, "The Middle East is heading into a serious Sunni-Shiite war. Indyk, who is the director of the Sabin Center for the Middle East Policy, which is a Zionist operation, at the Brookings Institution, added, "It is not clear whether the White House is fully aware of the strategic implications of the new policy. We're doubling our bet in Iraq, but we're doubling our bet across the region. This is going to get very complicated," he says. "Everything is upside down," quote unquote. Brothers and sisters, the skunk is out of the closet. The stench is across your nostrils. They're allied with the people they target as the war on terror. Who are the real targets of this war on terror? You and me, brothers and sisters, the suffering people of Iraq, the suffering people of Iran, wherever people work for a living, wherever people aspire to have a decent way of life, wherever people don't want to be exploited, wherever they try to resist the predations upon their lives, we are the targets. The administration's new policy for containing Iran seems to complicate its strategy for winning the war in Iraq, he writes. This is an elaborate article. It is a full documentation. It is an extraordinary expose. The redirection is nothing more than a desperate imperialism having been defeated by the population in Iraq, switching sides.
And Ralph, at real root, if you go back in the history of the Middle East, is the imperial struggle against socialism, a socialism of them in the Middle East. And that is exactly why they had to destroy the national bourgeois revolutions of the time, the movements of the time, which would have progressed. There was the nationalization of resources, and there would have been the movement of the people for socialism, the movement towards a socialist Middle East. And this is what we see time and again, whether in the Zionist plan for the Middle East of Odedinond in the 1980s, or another important work from the American Enterprise Institute, which has become seminal for this administration, and that's the work of David Wormsa in 1997, Coping with Crumbling States, a Western and Israeli Balance of Power Strategy for the Levant. And by that, he means Iraq, Syria, Lebanon. And what he says, and this has been the, it takes off from the Odedinon, it takes off from this idea of the confessional and ethnic Middle East, that it's been cobbled together by colonial powers. And what he states is, quote, "Underneath the facades of unity enforced by state repression," by which he refers to the regimes of Hafez al-Assad in Syria and in Iraq of Saddam Hussein, the regime propped and created by the CIA. He says, "Underneath the facades of unity, their politics are still defined primarily by tribalism, sectarianism, and gang-clan-like competition. It is unlikely that any institutions created by tyrannical secular Arab nationalist leaders, particularly the army, will escape being torn apart. The leaders of both Syria and Iraq seek to overcome the consequences of this internal failure by engaging in relentless external efforts to control the region. This is an entire fabrication because it denies the actual history, which is the CIA creating this Saddam Hussein, using him, their man in Baghdad, and opposing the national struggles of the Iraqis."
Maya, the design for fragmenting each Middle Eastern country in its turn, as you say, was laid out in a document by Odedinon of the Mossad. The first target was Iraq, and it was explicit in stating that it would be broken up into its ethnic and religious components, and that that in turn would be done for every country in the Arab East, so there would no longer be national states but little tribal regions that would be dependent on Israel and dependent upon the United States and could not form any resistance. And that theme has been constant in the so-called neocon agenda, but it is not the neocons alone, because that was in fact what Brzezinski had intended in Afghanistan, and that is indeed what they sought when they sent Saddam Hussein to attack Iran and amputate the oil-producing province, and that is indeed what was involved when Saddam Hussein, who was a Central Intelligence Agency assassin, a young man who was an asset of the CIA station in Baghdad, was sent to assassinate the leader of the Iraqi National Revolution, Abdul Karim Qasim, As I've mentioned often, I saw Abdul Karim Qasim in 1962, in December of 62, to talk about the pending attack from the Central Intelligence Agency after he had confined the oil companies to 0.1% of the territory of Iraq. By February, Saddam Hussein had murdered him. And the United States installed Saddam Hussein, and for 27 years he was their torturing man in Baghdad to eliminate the fruit of the Iraqi Revolution of 1958. That is the nature of imperial policy. Saddam was their man. They used him for every crime. They used him for a war on Iran after the Iranian Revolution. 1 million casualties, 1 million deaths. We've described it often. Here we have, in the documentation, there's only a tiny bit of what there is to demonstrate the nature of this operation here. Israel trains U.S. assassination squads in Iraq. A detailed article that goes into the fact that the Zionists, and this is by Julian Borger in The Guardian, December 9th, 2003, Israeli operatives are training U.S. special forces in counterinsurgency operations in Iraq, including the use of assassination squads. U.S. intelligence and military sources confirmed yesterday, this is in The Guardian, the Israeli Defense Forces have sent urban warfare specialists to Fort Bragg in North Carolina, the home of U.S. Special Forces. U.S. forces in Iraq's Sunni Triangle have already begun to use tactics that echo Israeli operations in the occupied territories, sealing off resistance areas with razor wire, enshrouding entire populations within barbed wire encampments, and targeting leaders with death squad operations.
That's right, targeted assassinations, and this was among them, Force 121 and another force, Special Operations Forces, one to particularly go after Saddam Hussein and
listen,
Abu.
Listen to the account, Maya, in The Guardian of the Day. This is an assassination program. That is what is being prepared here. These are hunter-killer teams going after the population, said a former senior U.S. intelligence official. These tactics and this involvement of Israel will inflame the population and create a volatile situation in the Middle East. This is bonkers. This is insane. We're already being compared to Sharon in the Arab world, and now we've confirmed it by bringing in the Israelis and the Mossad and setting up assassination teams for the population. They are being trained by Israelis in Fort Bragg. A well-informed intelligence source confirmed in Washington, and it's a detailed article with Brigadier General Michael Vane describing the cooperation with Israel in a letter to Army magazine in July. Then who but Ralph Peters is brought in? Colonel Ralph Peters, Army intelligence officer, who is the author of Blood Borders. In June of 2006, June 23rd, in the Armed Forces Journal, which draws the map of the Middle East to come, every single country will be broken up into its ethnic and religious components, and the entire map, the design which they are seeking to impose, is laid out there. Baluchistan, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Kurdistan, each country fragmented, and the map of the Middle East redrawn until there is no longer a national entity. How is that to be done?
Ralph, I really want to return to the Wormsa, because Wormsa, as noted by Robert Dreyfus, migrated from the Israeli-connected Washington Institute on Near East Policy to the American Enterprise Institute, and then to Douglas Feith's Office of Special Plans, and then to John Bolton's Arms Control Shop, and after that to the State Department, to Dick Cheney's, what Dreyfus calls the Shadow National Security Council in the Office of the Vice President, from 2001 to 2006. And it's here that we had the crafting of this war, this assault, this war, the genocidal plans against Iraq. And in this document of Wormser's, He states over and again, Iraq must fall. Iraq is key to U.S. and Israeli strategic policy in the Levant. And what he says is it must be informed by an appreciation that you have to have the perseverance of tribes and clans. That is preserving and fostering tribal and clan mentality. Because he said what we need to do is to forge eventual tribal, familial, and clan unions under, quote, limited governments. And key to that is limited governments. This is the Odedinon plan for the confessional states, which are small, which are controlled, so that Israel becomes the major dominant power in and through Israel, the United States, the major powers of the Middle East.
Maya, the articles that document this are numerous. Here's the Baltimore Sun, December 10th, 2003. It's called The West Bank of the Tigris. American tactics resemble Israel's in its conflict with the Palestinians. It's not hard to see why. Cordoning off villages, blowing up houses, seizing relatives, targeting populations. Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, the U.S. commander in Iraq, has said the attacks are identical to what is done with the Palestinians, and special forces troops are going to kill sectors of the population. This is the Baltimore Sun. Dar Jamil, in his report of the assaults upon the mosques, Ayatollah Sistani's office made the following statement in the aftermath. We call upon believers everywhere to express through peaceful means their sorrow and shock and not to be led into sectarian strife. The Shiite religious authority Ayatollah Hussein Ismail al-Sadr warned of the emergence of sectarian strife that the occupiers want to impose upon us. Of course it is not Sunnis who did this work. It is the terrorists who are the enemies of Shiites and Sunni, of Muslims and non-Muslims, the enemies of all religion. This terrorism of the occupying forces of the United States does not have a religion. He said, do not touch a Sunni mosque. Our Sunni brothers must be protected. We have to stand together against this terrorism and this sabotage of the occupiers. The two shrines located in the Samar region, which is predominantly Sunni, have been protected and been guarded for years. And again, in the report by Jamel corroborating what we'd been citing earlier, the object of this is to start a civil or religious war in Iraq. Thank God our Sunni and Shiite references are urging everyone not to respond to these provocations. We understand what they are attempting to do. The population in Iraq is victim of this, but the leaders of Sunni and Shia are not in any sense on board for it, let alone fooled by it. Quote again, it is not the Sunnis who attacked the shrine of Imam al-Hadi, God's peace upon him, but the occupying forces, God damn them. Nobody should attack Sunni mosque, ordered the Ahmadi army. We shall protect both Sunni and Shia shrines. And as I said, the Iranian leadership issued the same declaration, and Dyer Jamal in his dispatches, over and again, who benefits? The most important question that has to be asked regarding these consistent bombings is who gains, who benefits? Not the population, not the leadership, not the Sunni, not the Shia. The horrific attacks which destroyed the mosques have generated outrage amongst the population across the country, Sunni and Shia alike.
Ralph, and consequently, what you have with the United States Special Forces, with the arming and of the Iraqi Special Security Forces that work with the United States, with the privatized mercenary squads that are funded by the State Department, funded by the CIA, funded by the Pentagon through special secret funds, undisclosed funds that are targeted funds for other things, you have here the disintegration, the shredding of Iraqi national life. Now there are 140,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, plus plus many more of the privatized support services. And this isn't even going to be enough. As Deputy Defense Secretary Gordon England told the Senate Budget Committee, there is going to have to be a large surge, and the Congressional Budget Office estimates that 28,000 extra troops will be needed to support the escalation of the troops that are sent and in place. So what we have here, as we have discussed, is the Imperial Death Squads and the shredding of Iraqi national life. And we will continue with this subject next week.
Maya, the amplification of this evidence, which is massive, will explain exactly the strategy for Iran and the attacks that are planned after Iran on Pakistan. This is an ongoing struggle, brothers and sisters.
This is Taking Aim with
Rav Shonman
and Maya Shon. Our program today, Imperial Death Squads and the Shredding of Iraqi National Life, was recorded March 6, 2007. It's available on our internet site, www.takingaimradio.com, and on the WBAI archive. We'll be with you next week.